El Pacifico, Phil Hendry.
And it's the world-famous Phil Hendry Show here every night till 1 o'clock on the West Coast and 4 a.m. on the East Coast, the news talk and entertainment show that knows what it's talking about, where truth is our bitch, and where we go places other talk shows wish they could, but they can't, and so they don't. And if you don't believe us, just ask them. And you can join us right now online at philhendryshow.com. We have live streaming video of the show, our video cast, Phil TV in HD, where you can actually watch the show, and it's pretty weird. If there is a radio show that you want to watch on video, this is the one. The rest of them are a little on the, I think a little on the dull side to watch anyway. But I think we look pretty interesting. That's a kind word to put on it. Our number is 877-876-PHIL, 877-876-7445. And again, philhendryshow.com. We've got a date. Well, actually, I gave that date to my backstage pass holders. Do I want to give it to the folks that are listening right now? Well, okay, later on. I'm just buds in the other room giving you the high sign. Let's do it later on. We're going to bring on tonight some commentary for you on the debate this evening that was held in Jacksonville. I thought it was very interesting. And obviously you could see both Congressman Gingrich and you could see Governor Romney making some, you know, making some, trying to make a few connections there with their the body politic. And we'll see exactly who was the winner, at least in the minds of two of our guests this evening. One is a businessman from Buena Park, California. He is the chairman of Fraser Foods, which is a grocery chain throughout the Southwest and Southeast, Robert Green. We also have with us Larry Grover, who is a also a Republican, a conservative voter. He is works for a printing shop in Culver City, California. He's also the chairman of Conservatives of Kern County. And Larry joins us from Culver City. Bob, how are you doing?
Well, I'm doing great, thank you.
And Larry, how are you?
Well, I'm great, Phil. I'm interested to get into this discussion, this debate tonight.
Okay, let's start with you, Larry. I know that you are pretty much the Gingrich supporter, and I would ask Bob, do I call you Robert or Bob?
Bob's fine, Phil. Bob is fine.
All right, you're a Romney supporter, right?
I tend to think that Mitt Romney is the answer for the Republican Party. Yes, I am.
Okay. I want to start with the Gingrich side of things here. And you gentlemen can engage each other at some point, but I do want to control the dialogue a little bit here at the beginning and find out how you guys feel about your candidate. But starting with you, Larry, how do you think Newt Gingrich did?
Well, this might be a little unusual for, you know, somebody who supports a candidate the way that I do, and I've always been a very big Newt Gingrich fan, but I feel like I need to be honest, and I'm saying this for the Gingrich campaign as well as for those of us who are Gingrich supporters. I don't think he did well tonight. As a matter of fact, I think he hurt himself, and it could have been a fatal mistake, and when he got into this discussion, however bizarre, about a moon base.
Yeah.
And I'm sorry?
I was just agreeing with you, sir.
Well,
why don't we just go ahead, Bob, let Larry...
I apologize.
And the discussion of the moon base was unfortunate. And the reason why it was unfortunate is because, first of all, I think it made the congressman, the speaker, look a little disconnected from the economic reality of America these days, what Americans are up against. The last thing we need is a moon base, and the last thing we need are the expenditures, as even Romney pointed out, of hundreds of billions, if not trillions of dollars for a moon base. I feel that that was a mistake because Romney was able to seize on it, and I don't think he mocked Speaker Gingrich, but I think he had the audience clearly on his side when he said that it was just not a feasible idea. And when they went back to Speaker Gingrich and he was talking about the idea of a moon base, the point was made by, I guess it was Governor Romney again, that this was a idea he got when he was speaking to Space Coast workers.
Right. Now, when you say he was, and I heard Governor Romney say that, was that as something he brought up just to throw something at these Space Coast workers for them to, when we say Space Coast folks, we're talking about that Central Florida coast there.
Yeah, it's where the Cape is.
Right, and
well, I think he was. I think as Governor Romney pointed out, you know, I hate to have to quote the candidate of my opponent in the debate tonight, supports, but it's unfortunately, Romney said, and he was right, that Gingrich brought that up because he was in front of Space Coast workers, so he wanted to have something to say to them that would get them excited about his candidacy, that he was in favor of some far-reaching space mission, and that would include a moon base. Unfortunately, it came off sounding, kind of a kooky.
Kind of a goofy idea.
Kind of a goofy idea. And when I heard it, I shook my head. I was watching it with mother, and I said, "This is probably the end here, because he had to really make himself sound like he was in charge, factually, with the vision, with the numbers." That he knew what his strengths were over his opponent, and man,
didn't happen.
It didn't happen.
All right, Bob. That kind of leaves it open for Romney there. At least it sounds like what Larry was saying is that Gingrich opened the door and really didn't do much to keep Romney from charging right on through.
Well, Phil, I think it takes an honest person to admit when their candidate has done, the kind of damage I think that Gingrich did to himself tonight. So I appreciate Mr. Grover's point of view. I can't disagree with anything he's saying. Governor Romney, I think, was right on top of the facts tonight. I think Governor Romney, as a matter of fact, made Newt Gingrich looked bad, not just in the discussion of the space mission to the moon, but I think he made Speaker Gingrich look bad when he was talking about Freddie Mac.
Yeah, that was another one.
Right. So when Freddie Mac brought up that Mitt Romney was, quote, a stockholder in Freddie Mac, when Gingrich brought this up, and I think it was Gingrich's intent to sort of turn the tables on Romney, Romney turned it right back around on him and said, first of all, I don't own stock. I have bonds and mutual funds, and you do too, Mr. Speaker, in Freddie Mac, for which Gingrich did not have any real answer. So I can't disagree with what Mr. Grover, I can't disagree with you at all. And I'm sorry, I forgot your name because I agree with you so much. I think what's happened here tonight is that Speaker Gingrich has become so irrelevant because of his missteps that his supporters become irrelevant. And for a moment, I had forgotten the very name of the man that I'm debating tonight. So I think I apologize to you, sir. But that is the damage that Gingrich has done.
All right, Robert Green is with us along with Larry Grover from Conservatives of Kern County, and we are talking about the debate tonight between four principals in the Republican nomination race, Rick Santorum and Ron Paul, but of course the two frontrunners, Newt Gingrich and Mitt Romney. Larry, do you want to comment on what, specifically to what Bob said about the insignificance?
Well, I can't disagree with him. Gingrich is... I don't think he's going to be insignificant, but he makes those of us who support him. If this gentleman can't remember my name, then that shows you. And what Gingrich did tonight was be so ineffective in that debate that I've got to go on these radio shows now and basically say that I've got a bad candidate. I supported a bad candidate. I got to sit here and listen to this gentleman and a lot of other people talk about Romney, and there's nothing I can do about it. Now, if this was a prize fight, they would stop it. But it's not. I will be forced this evening and tomorrow as I do these radio shows to take endless abuse and take endless shots. Because Gingrich came on tonight and talked about a moon base and didn't talk like an adult. And that is It's very difficult to take.
Phil, I just want to jump in.
Go ahead, Bob.
I understand what this gentleman's saying. It's like I've won the debate even before it started.
You have.
Yeah, no, I understand that. It's like I've won the debate before it started because Gingrich wanted to hang his hat on a moon mission. It is unconscionable that a candidate for president of the United States would, at the 11th hour, throw into this race this bright idea of putting a colony of people on the moon. He has made a joke out of his candidacy. He's made a joke out of this poor gentleman I'm talking to tonight.
Do you feel that way, Larry?
Yes, I do. I feel as if he has made me into a clown.
And he's made a joke out of this gentleman tonight. And what is more, Phil, he'll never be taken seriously as a candidate for the highest office in the land again.
All right, well, we're talking here with Robert Green and Larry Grover from Conservatives of Kern County. And the two of them are debating the debate. They are talking about the performance of their candidates. Mr. Grover is a supporter of Newt Gingrich, and Robert Green is a supporter of Mitt Romney. And you can hear Larry Grover say Newt Gingrich lost it right out of the gate when he started talking about moon missions, and Bob Green concurs. So what we have here is not so much a debate. We've got one of the candidate's supporters throwing flowers into the grave, it sounds like. What do you think? 877-876-PHIL, 877-876-7445. As we continue discussing the Republican debate tonight in Jacksonville and the possible end to the Newt Gingrich campaign. The world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
Truth is our bitch. The Phil Hendry Show.
I don't think we're getting a little left of him.
Listening to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
And welcome back here on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. Our number 877-876-7445. We're doing a usual post-mortem on the debate tonight in Jacksonville. It really was the Newt Gingrich and Mitt Romney show, as it has been. With me is Robert Green from Fraser Foods, a Mitt Romney supporter. And Bob, I'd have to say that you're a businessman. Do you think it breaks down in the Republican Party when you talk about these two candidates? Are we talking about blue collar for Newt Gingrich and the white collar business people for Mitt Romney?
I think so, Phil. I can look at the people who work for me. I will talk to them. A lot of them are Democrats, which is a difficult thing for me to have to listen to, but nonetheless, a lot of them are. But the ones that are Republicans are Gingrich people, and I'm talking about our guys that work the stock room, our truck drivers, and so forth. When you get up the ladder to the management people who've had some business experience, who have understand how the world works a little bit, you will find more and more that we are Mitt Romney fans. But the lower down the ladder you go and the further down, for instance, the educational, when you look at the aptitude of people in terms of education, when you look at their earning power, when you look at their overall ability to comprehend issues, and you go lower and lower and lower, and that's where you're going to find the Newt Gingrich people. So, and which is not to criticize, you know.
Well, it does sound a little like the Newt Gingrich people are not as intelligent.
No. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying the Newt Gingrich people are not. They don't tend to be people that are high achievers, and that's why I think Mitt Romney is a good example. Not just for those of us who succeed in business, but also those of us who want to succeed.
Larry?
Well, there's not a lot that he said there that I disagree with, and that's been the very difficult part of this evening, Phil. I turn on this debate, and I want to see my man do well, which is, Newt Gingrich. And he not only doesn't do well, he brings up the moon base. He gets it wrong about Freddie Mac. And I am forced to look in a mirror and see exactly what it was that Mr. Green was talking about here, that I am a blue-collar worker.
What, now, what do you do exactly, sir?
I work for a print shop.
What do you mean you work for a print shop?
I work for a printing shop. I handle printing jobs for a print shop at Culver City.
Okay.
And so at one time I did have a much higher paying job, but I don't anymore. I have told you and I've told your audience that I am living with my mother and I am having to stay out on a porch. I don't even have my own room. When you put that together with the fact that I support Newt Gingrich, and then he came out tonight and made his moon base pitch, yes, it does look as if I am not only undereducated and not earning very well, but that I'm not very bright.
Yeah, but I'm not saying that, you know.
He isn't saying that you're... He's not saying that Newt Gingrich supporters are not intelligent.
You said that we were what?
No, I'm saying that... I'm not saying you're not intelligent. I'm saying you're undereducated. I think there's a lot of things you need to learn about the world.
I'm 42 years old, and I think that's old enough to know about the world.
Yes, you're absolutely right. But when it comes to politics, there's a lot that people have to learn. And politically, Phil, I would say that if you were to compare me and Larry, and I think Larry is a hardworking guy, and like I said, this is not about his intelligence, but the political age of a man like this is probably somewhere around 9 or 10 years old, and I'm an adult. And what do I mean by that? I mean that I make adult decisions when it comes to politics, but this guy is making...
Go ahead.
If you would not refer to me as this guy...
I apologize, sir, but you know, Larry is making decisions like he's 10 or 11.
Well, that, you know, and what you're saying there is that is a political age.
That's a political age.
What do you think of that, Larry?
Well, what do I think? I think that it's hard not to be insulted by that.
I'm not trying to insult you, sir.
No, I know that. It's hard not to be insulted by it, but by the same token, you know, I can't disagree with it. I have tried my best to make the right decisions politically in my life, and I always come up voting for the wrong guy.
Who did you support in the 2008 elections?
I was a Huckabee fan.
Oh boy, yeah, you got that wrong.
Yeah, I was a Huckabee fan, and then for a while I was for Sarah Palin. And these are not good decisions. When I went with Newt Gingrich, I felt that I had an experienced politician.
He's a Washington insider, and when he came out with and I'd like to refocus on the moon base thing, Phil.
Go ahead.
Newt Gingrich, when he brought up the moon base, I think tipped his hand at just how in touch with reality he's not to say that he wants to land on the moon. And now you have a gentleman here, Larry Grover, who was a supporter of his, and even he's embarrassed by it. So I think what Gingrich did tonight, I think he threw his supporters to the dogs.
I can't disagree.
And I think he's going to have to make a comeback somehow.
Well, all right. The moon base idea...
See, for me, the moon base idea is one of those killers that people will never forget.
Yeah, it's tantamount to, and I'm a Newt Gingrich fan, it's tantamount to like when Ford said, I don't think the polls consider themselves dominated by the communists, you know, that kind of thing.
All right, gentlemen, hang on the line here. I want to get some phone calls here before we are done with this discussion of the debate tonight. We have on the line Larry Grover and Bob Green as they talk about this debate between the four candidates, which of course was Santorum and Paul and Gingrich and Romney, but everybody is looking at Gingrich and Romney because those are the two contenders. Tonight we have Larry Grover, who is a supporter of Newt Gingrich, but feels that he fatally wounded his campaign tonight by talking about a moon base, going to the moon, colonizing the moon, etc. And we have with us also Bob Green, who is discussing Mitt Romney's campaign, a guy that he supports and who he feels is the most viable candidate for the job. All right, our number is 877-876-PHIL, 877-876-7445. We'll take some phone calls. We'll get back here with Bob Green and Larry Grover tonight on the debate and who won. And it sounds like both of these guys are saying Romney did, one of them being a Gingrich supporter. 877-876-PHIL, the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
Phil Hendry. Famous Phil Hendry Show.
877-876-PHIL, the world famous Phil Hendry Show. As we talk about the debate tonight, Larry Grover has joined us along with Robert Greene, Gingrich, and Romney. And what are your feelings, guys, about Gingrich, Romney, and their accessibility to the average voter? I'll start with you, Bob.
Well, I think that presidential debates are difficult for most people to understand. Most voters, especially Republican voters, and I understand this, they want to get to the general election. When you talk about Gingrich, I think he has afforded people the opportunity tonight to concentrate more on Romney because that moon base comment really screwed him. And you've got a Gingrich supporter here who agrees with me.
Larry, let me ask you something. Does this clear the field for Romney?
I think so.
You think it does?
I think it does because, you know, it's a pop culture we live in. And the pop culture that we live in, people grab a hold of these headlines and they hug them for dear life. And when a very intelligent guy like Newt Gingrich says, let's go to the moon and colonize it, you've got a problem because now he is seen as a weird ass, excuse my language, and the average man, while he wants to vote for a guy like Gingrich, I truly believe, doesn't want to embarrass himself by putting some guy in there who believes in moon bases. And this is the point, Phil, where I think guys like me take over. And by that I mean business people are able to tell the rank and file, all right, you fooled around long enough, here's the guy, Romney.
Do you feel now that you're going to vote for Romney, Larry?
I got no choice. I either do that, or we got Obama for another 4 years.
All right, 877-876-PHIL is our number, 877-876-7445. Here is this Gloria or Kim? I forget your name, ma'am.
It's
on line one. Hello, it's Gloria. Go ahead, Gloria.
Yes,
yeah,
good
go
evening.
Ahead.
Well,
good evening.
I was going to make a comment to Larry because, to me, he's over-focusing on Newt's comment about a moon base. To me, it would be like, I think he said in during his second term, if he were elected president. And I just look at a comment like that as no different than perhaps Obama, in his more of a socialistic Western Europe bent, looking for nirvana in his eyes of what we do with our energy and that we don't develop it here. I mean, he says one thing and does another. And I think that a comment like that coming from Newt Gingrich, he is a man of many ideas. And I do not see it is over the top kind of a negative.
I got to interrupt the lady. You just basically said that Gingrich is as flaky as Obama. When you say that Obama comes out with some pie, and then Gingrich comes out. There's no way we can afford a moon base.
Well,
not even a second term or a third term. There's no way. So you make Gingrich sound like he's a flake.
No.
Well, isn't that what you're saying, though, Larry?
I'm saying he can't get elected. I'm stopping short of saying the guy's flaky.
Go ahead, Gloria.
Well, I don't. You know, Obama has been in there for over 3 years, and I think that a comment made by Newt Gingrich. Speaker Gingrich is, it's probably a wish list, perhaps, when he's talking to the people in Florida who have lost their jobs with NASA. So a comment, I mean, we have seen Obama in action on these two a year ago, and then this one. So many people have commented how his dialogue has been the same from one
The lady's still talking. Go ahead, ma'am.
Well,
I wanted to, she sounded like she was maybe getting stumbly about
She's doing fine. Go ahead.
The comments that Obama made in his speech are so much like the ones.
Excuse me for a minute, Gloria. Bob, don't let me interrupt the lady.
Well, she didn't sound like she knew what she wanted to say.
She's doing fine. Go on, Gloria.
And Mr. Green,
I agree with Larry. You're comparing him to Obama. Why are you doing that to your candidate?
Well,
You're making him sound like a flake case.
I'm just saying that Newt Gingrich can. I look at Obama has had 3 years to actually do stuff, and Gingrich is just having a dialogue with these people. You're making a mountain out of a molehill.
Well, no, but you see, when he goes in front of those space workers and he makes promises he can't keep, what do you think's going to happen when they come to him in 3 years or second term, whatever you said, and they say, "How about our moon base now?" And you know he can't do it.
Well,
he can't
do it.
He knows he can't do it. He knows he's lying.
Wait a minute.
I don't look.
You're a You're a Republican, Bob. Why would you call him a liar?
Look, I'm a Gingrich supporter, and I say he's a liar, and that hurts for me to do that.
Go ahead, Gloria.
Well, I don't look at him as a liar. I think the man.
He's a bald-faced liar. He's a bald-faced liar.
And he's made me look like an ass.
I'm Larry Grover. I've been a Gingrich supporter since day one, and I have been a laughingstock in front of everyone because people are saying, "Oh, hey, how you doing, Moon Boy?"
They're not tonight.
Yes.
Well, what can I say about your friends? I have friends, and they're not saying that to me.
Are any of your friends making fun of you, ma'am? Are they laughing at you, or are they?
No. No, we.
Well, let me be the first.
That's real.
Well, we have to agree to disagree. And
I can tell you that, Gloria, I agree with. I think Newt Gingrich is, but he has what he's done is basically, there was a term when we were kids growing up. I don't know if you remember it. Giving somebody the BA. You know what that was? That was when you pulled your pants down. Okay, big deal. But unfortunately tonight, Newt Gingrich had just BA'd the American, basically Republican voters like me.
Well,
that's like saying he did it on purpose.
Well, when you go up in front of space workers and say, "Oh, here's something for you. Let's go to the moon and build a colony." Yeah. Come on.
Well, I look at it as a wish list. Right. We all have wish lists in our life. Sometimes they come true, sometimes they
don't. And sometimes they don't. Gloria, thank you so much for your call. I appreciate it. 877-876 Phil is the number here as we discuss the campaign. I think that what you're talking about here, Larry, it's getting a little over the top when you say that Gingrich is doing this on purpose.
Well, I don't think I said that.
When you say he's BA-ing everybody.
Yeah, to me, a BA is intentional. Well, well, you can say that. What I'm saying is what he did was rude. That's what I'm saying. Rude. It's rude to say here is a moon base that we're never going to build. Whether the BA is intentional or not, it may be that he just thought it was an opportune moment to pull his pants down. And I know we're not talking literally about that.
Yeah, it's a ridiculous comparison, I think.
Well, no, it's not. I don't think so, because what it is an insult. Whether or not it was whether or not it was on purpose, or whether or not it was something that it was an improvised move, and he just simply wanted to do it, I don't know. Well, the idea of a BA is that...
Let's get off the whole BA thing, all right?
Well, no, but he brought it up, and I think either it's intentional or it isn't. Well,
What are you guys debating now?
Whether a BA is intentional or not.
You have to assume that it is.
It's intentional. But is it was it pre-planned, was it premeditated, or was it an opportune moment for him to yank his pants down?
Okay, well, I think it's a crude comparison.
We're talking about embarrassing people.
All right, maybe you could have come up with something else, but if you're saying that that Gingrich was insulting you, his supporter, his blue collar supporter, if he's insulting you, then either he's doing it on purpose, or it's because he made a mistake.
Exactly.
Okay, if you believe that. Then saying that he BA'd you in, figurative terms, it means it was on purpose.
Yeah, that's my point, Phil. And I think that wasn't your point at all. Your point was that he did it on purpose, No. I said that Gingrich did it as a stunt.
Look, let's not talk about that anymore, okay?
Well, either he did it on purpose, or he did it because why?
I can't think of another reason. If you're telling me he's trying to embarrass you, his baseline voter, his base of support, I should say, if that's what you're saying, then there's no other possible explanation. He did it on purpose.
So he pulled his pants down and showed his bare ass.
Why don't we watch the language, number one, and forget about whether that is the appropriate comparison. I don't think it is.
Well, if it is, then it shows hatred on the part of Gingrich for his voters and his supporters.
I can't, well, talking about a moon, let's go to the moon. And again, what else do you call yanking your pants down? B.A.? Or...
Okay, thank you, and hold on. 877-87-MOONING to finish your thought. 877-876-PHIL, the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. We'll be right back with Larry Grover and with Robert Greene as we post-mortem this debate. Newt Gingrich and Mitt Romney. And is this the end for Gingrich? Is this the bitter end, bringing up a moon base and trillions of dollars that it would cost to build a moon base in the middle of an economic downturn that we're trying to recover from? World famous Phil Hendry Show.
Truth is our bitch. The Phil Hendry Show.
That's what I said. No, you didn't. Mr. Hendry said it.
World-famous Phil Hendry Show.
Well, we'll get into that if you want to. We're talking to Larry Grover and to Robert Greene about the debate that has just ended there in Jacksonville. Now, you guys are talking about what happened today in Arizona?
Yeah, Phil, there was an exchange between Obama and the Arizona governor, Jan Brewer, and the what happened was is that Jan Brewer was very animate, and she was talking in a very animate fashion to the president, and apparently she was waving her finger, or putting her finger in the president's face. I didn't have a problem with that. I thought that she was trying to make a point about immigration, and Obama was standing there looking at her like she was some... I don't think he gave her respect. I see it differently.
All right. Well, this is a very interesting conversation we're having here tonight because, on the one hand, you know, Larry, you're a Gingrich supporter. On the other hand, you can't bring yourself to support the guy. 877-876-PHIL is the number here on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. Let's go to Kevin. You're on the Phil Hendry Show with Larry Grover and Bob Greene. Go ahead.
Yes. I think they both of them have overlooked the lies that both of them, both Gingrich and Romney, both exposed on each other. I mean, there was the lying about the taxes. There was the lying about his affiliate, not mixed, but Newt's affiliation.
Romney didn't lie. Romney tells the truth. You're talking about Gingrich, right?
No, I'm talking about both of them. Romney acts like he doesn't know how much money he makes. He doesn't act like he doesn't know anything about anything. He's flip-flopped about abortion. He's so passionate. He was so passionate in the debate against Kennedy about abortion because one of his relatives died and his mother ran for Senate and she was supporting the right to make a choice. And he said his whole family felt that women should have that right since he had a relative that was dying from an illegal abortion.
Well, let me talk to the gentleman, if I could, Kevin. This is Larry. You know, I don't disagree with you that Gingrich. See, my point is this: that Gingrich, by coming out in support of a moon landing and colonization, has made him look as if he belongs in a rubber room.
Well,
so when you say he's a liar,
they proved he wasn't a conservative because all the billions of dollars that it would take to do that in the wake of
that's
economy,
a good point. Yeah,
he's not trying to be a conservative, and according to most of the
that's a very good point.
That he's the most conservative person up there, and that proved different already. So, and if you're listening,
and I wanted to, this is Bob Greene, Kevin. Let me just mention this to you. because I support Romney, but I will say this. When you're that wealthy, and Romney is wealthy, there's no question, I don't know if it's possible to know how much money you've got. You know?
Think about it.
Every day you're making more and more and more.
Compared to what this nation owes.
And the moon landing.
He seems to be quite knowledgeable about how much this country owes, how deep our deficit is. But he won't know how many billions. I mean, what he is personally as a billionaire or a millionaire, whichever one it is, it doesn't even compare to how much we owe. And if he can't get a grant for what he owes, then how can he?
He doesn't owe it. He has it. That's his money. And when you're that wealthy, you get to a point where you can't even know how much you've got because it's exhausting.
What do you mean
it's exhausting?
He doesn't even know how much taxes he pays. And he's a liar.
Yeah, well, no, they said he paid at a 13% rate.
Well, but here's the thing, Kevin. You make some good points about Romney, but Gingrich, I can't even support him. I'm a conservative, okay, and I know I'm talking, you're probably a Democrat, but I can't even support Gingrich now. Because now you've told me he's also a liar on top of a guy that belongs in a psychiatric hospital. And now I got to support
him. You're living at home with your mama on the front porch. And you support
yes,
the one who only wants to give tax breaks to the wealthy. It doesn't even make sense.
I live on a porch. I sleep on a cot. And I've got hardly any money. And why I'm supporting Gingrich?
I own my own business. I have two homes. I can't possibly see. My wife and I, we are middle class. And
are you a Democrat, sir, or are you a Republican?
No, I'm no Republican.
Well, why wouldn't you? If you own your own home, you ought to be a Republican.
Well, let the man finish.
You're right. I mean, I live on a porch. I have nothing. My mother tells me, I'm 43 years old, and my mother tells me what to do, to take garbage out. And I'm supporting Gingrich. I don't know why. And now he wants to go to the moon. Why?
Anyway, Kevin, thank you for your call, sir. I appreciate it very much. 877-876-PHIL.
You laugh, Phil, but I said this to you the other night. I said that Gingrich had to pull the fat out of the fire. He did. And then he turns around and he says, let's put a base on the moon. Are you listening to him?
Well, I am, yeah.
And I am too, Phil and Larry. And I think the only guy that wasn't listening to him was you until tonight. Well, it's making me rethink. And just as this man said, I live with my mother. I'm not ashamed to say this. And you were on the program the other night saying that you have a difficult social life. Yes, I do, because I live with my mother. I sleep on a cot. I have to borrow her car. I walk. Most of the dates I go out on with women, we take either the bus or we walk. And we had to walk probably about 4 miles to go to the movies the other night, because that's the closest movie house.
Why don't you get a cab?
It costs money. So today, I saw Jan Brewer waving her finger in the face of the president, and that's when I said, that's got to stop. As conservatives, we've got to stop that. I was half waiting for Obama to slap her right across the face.
Well, that would have been a mistake.
No, I don't think it would have been a mistake, because if we as conservatives want to get the respect of the American people, we're going to have to start to act like we deserve respect. And Jan Brewer, I know, is loved by the people of Arizona, but here again, I got Gingrich, who gave me a slap to one side of my face, and Jan Brewer just slapped the other side of my face. Why can't I want her to get slapped in the face?
What are you referring to?
He's talking about the thing on the runway.
Are you're talking about that, Larry?
Yeah. What she was standing there talking to Obama.
Okay, people don't know what you're talking about. The two of them were out on a runway. Was it Arizona?
I think so, yeah.
All right. He was talking with Jan Brewer, the governor of Arizona, and apparently she had written this book, Breakfast with Scorpions, or whatever the hell it's called, and there were some things in there that I guess the president took exception to. But what are you saying? Because they had an argument?
No, I don't care if they have an argument.
She was waving her finger in his face.
Okay, so you're talking about the propriety of this woman, the governor of Arizona, waving her finger in the president's face.
Yes. Well, Phil, I didn't see anything wrong with that because she was angry about the president.
Well, the president was taking issue with things in her book, and I guess she was getting upset that he was getting upset. We'll be back. World Famous Phil Henry Show, 877-876-PHIL, as we talk here with Larry Grover and Bob Green concerning tonight's debate, as well as now this conversation out on the runway today in Arizona between the president and Jan Brewer and the finger-waving of Jan Brewer and what was said and what wasn't said. We'll be right back. 877-876-PHIL, the World Famous Phil Henry Show.
Phil Henry. Broadcasting from the shores of El Pacifico, Phil Henry.
And welcome back here on the world famous Phil Henry Show, every night till 1 o'clock on the West Coast and 5 a.m., 4 a.m. on the East Coast. Where do we get 5 a.m.? I was thinking about the website, something. Anyway, we are here with you, a news talk and entertainment show that knows what it's talking about, where truth is our bitch and where we go any place, every place, even places that other talk shows wish they could, but they can't. We are online at philhenryshow.com with live streaming video of our show. It's Phil TV in HD. We also have our podcast every day that you can tap into. We have thousands and thousands and thousands of hours of archived full shows on our website, philhenryshow.com. It is a great adjunct to what we attempt to present here each and every night. I've had a little bit of a cold, so if listening to me has been a little difficult, I apologize. Robert Greene and Larry Grover are on the line with us as we talk not only tonight about the debate, but also about this incident you wanted to discuss, Larry, in Phoenix.
The only thing to bring that up, Phil, is Newt Gingrich, who I've been a supporter of, and Jan Brewer. I think the conservative cause was hurt not only by Gingrich wanting to land on the moon and put everybody in a moon helmet. I mean, I'm not even above now making fun of it. Phil, can I jump? I wanted to say something, Larry. Could I please? All right. Larry, I'm a Republican, and I'm a Mitt Romney supporter, but I don't think you're doing our ticket a whole lot of good when you continually bash Newt Gingrich, because while he might have not been thinking clearly tonight, and maybe it was a desperation move, and maybe he is not all there, I don't know. He's still a Republican, and I think for you to keep bashing him like that...
That's a good point.
Well, I'm trying to be honest. People want honesty. Everybody's always talking about honesty. Why aren't we honest? Why aren't they honest?
You're being honest, but now you're speculating as to the man's mental health.
No, sir. Sir, Newt Gingrich said, let's put a... Newt Gingrich said it. I didn't. Let's slap a moon helmet on everybody. And
well, he didn't put it that way. He said...
Well, he might as well have. And then you put that together with Jan Brewer today, wagging her finger in the face of a president. You know that Obama would have been within his rights to slap her right across the face. You know that, don't you?
That's not true.
No, I don't think that's true.
Excuse me? Why do you say it's not true?
Well, he can't slap somebody across the face.
He's the president of the United States.
It doesn't matter if he's the president. She was wagging her finger in his face. It was rude. I'll give you that.
And he would have been within his rights to take one step back, ask her to stop, and if she didn't, to slap the taste right out of her mouth. I would have.
Well, that's the difference between you and I think most men.
And that means what, sir?
I think it means that you haven't got a problem slapping women.
And what does that mean, sir?
Whoa, guys. Let's not get into this now, please. Let's not even go there now, please. Let's talk about one thing at a time. And we are discussing here the debate. We can get into Jan Brewer and the president if you'd like, but we are discussing the debate, and I want to get to some phone calls here. 877-876-PHIL. Let me go over here to Ansel. Ansel, go ahead. You're on the Phil Henry Show with Larry Grover and Bob Green.
Yes, Larry. I am really disappointed in what I'm hearing from a so-called supporter of Gingrich. But let me make my first point.
You said Gingrich, isn't it?
Yes. Let me make my
Where'd
first
you go?
Point. My first
yes,
point
sir.
Is, would you please shut up and let me speak?
Well, you called him Ging Gingrich.
He said Newt Gingrich.
Shut your mouth and let me speak, please. Have some manners.
Well, now you sound like Jan Brewer.
Shut your mouth and have some manners and let me speak. You've had enough tonight.
How do you like this guy?
Don't spoil the program. Don't you spoil the program.
How do you like this idiot? Guy?
Yes, sir.
I'm an idiot.
You are an idiot. You're talking like a jackass.
A jackass.
Shut your mouth. Shut your mouth.
Let the man. All right, Ansel. Go ahead, Ansel. Ansel, go ahead. Go ahead, sir, and say what you want to say.
My first point is, Phil, Romney come across tonight like an arrogant elitist who proved to the people in Florida tonight that he is above them. He's talking above the people. And for that reason, let me finish, please. And for that reason, I have no respect nor regard for him tonight, his performance. He was arrogant. He was going on like a bulldog. He wasn't behaving the way in which I expect him to behave as a Republican. Now, Gingrich did not perform as well as I expected. But for that man to be treating him and pulling him down into the gutters makes me sick.
Well, I didn't put him in the gutter.
If you are a Republican, you would not be behaving like that. You are a Democrat who was sent here to abuse Gingrich. That is my
opinion. No, sir, I am not. I am an open-minded Republican. I'm an open-minded Republican.
You are not open-minded. You are an idiot.
I am an idiot. I'm not the guy talking about landing on the moon. I didn't say let's land on the moon.
Mr. Man, I have spent 40 years in politics, and I know about politics.
That was Indian politics, not the same thing.
You are talking trash. And keep your mouth shut. You'll be better off. You're talking trash.
I'd like to start ahead.
Hey, Mr. Green, don't say that.
What?
Go ahead, sir.
You are talking trash. Outright trash.
Did I say let's go to the moon? No, Gingrich did. Did I say slip on a moon helmet?
Here you're talking again. Here you go again. I have no manners.
Ansel, go ahead.
Well, sir, you're making some outrageous statements. I wasn't talking about my moon helmet. He was.
What is wrong with that madman?
All right, Larry, let him finish. Let him finish.
I'm mad.
Mr. Green, come across.
Mr. Green, sir, don't use that term again. Go ahead, Ansel. The stage is yours. The floor is yours. Go ahead.
Mr. Green come across like a gentleman. He supports Mr. Romney, and I respect the man's feeling towards his candidate. And he was very appropriate in delivering his opinion, which I respect very much.
Thank you.
But to hear this other gentleman coming across claiming he's a supporter of a man, if he's a supporter of a man, why are you calling the man B.A.? Why are you using those language?
That's what he did to you, and that's what he did to me tonight. He dropped his pants and B.A.'d us.
Why are you pulling the program down to that level, to your level?
Well, that's what... Sir, I didn't do that. And by the way, Mr. Green, the guy you think is so great, called you a dothead. How do you like that?
I did not. That is an absolute lie. Absolute lie.
I heard it. I heard it.
This is a
look, he just told you to shut up, Phil.
And you
well, listen, Ansel, very good points. We have to move on.
That guy called you a dothead, sir. I didn't do that.
What?
Boy, you know something? You really want to lose tonight.
Phil, my final point.
Yes, sir.
Newt is to go right ahead with his campaign. The people in Florida are not fools. I know Floridonians too well. He will do well on Saturday.
Mm-hmm.
Gingrich's heart is in this thing. He loves the Floridonians. He wants to help them. He wants to help the country. And I know the man personally. He's a good guy. He means it from his heart. And he wants to help this country. He has the skills to do so. He has the ability to do so. And he will be the President of the United States of America. Thank you very much.
It proves the influence that Gingrich has had on you with the space program. You called them Floridonians, which makes them sound like they come from a moon that orbits Jupiter. And for me to have to listen to that, Mr. Henry...
Wait a minute. He called them Floridians.
No, I agree with Larry. He called them Floridonians.
Right.
So does that tell you something about the Gingrich campaign, that he's getting everybody's mind softened up and ready for the big moon push?
That's got nothing to do with it. Now, Mr. Green.
Yes, sir.
You called that man a dothead. I heard it.
No. I said, how do you like this guy?
You said, how do you like this dothead? And he had just gotten done complimenting you. I think that is a hell of a statement. It's very rude. I will not have that kind of language, as much as you may think it's appropriate.
I apologize, Phil. But the man was telling Larry to shut up.
He kept saying, shut up, shut up.
I heard that. And you know what? He was right, because you kept babbling.
Babbling? Oh. You're saying that I...
Phil.
Hold on. You got to get your mom. Mrs. Grover, it's nice to talk to you, hon. I'm going to talk to you in a minute, okay?
Let me have the phone, Mother.
I can't deal with him, with that mother he's got.
My mother is none of your business. Mother wanted to talk, Phil.
I don't want her on the air until we're done. All right?
I understand.
I would like you to cease with the dothead comment, Mr. Green.
I apologize if that's what I said. I don't remember.
Well, that's okay. And I'd like to give our people a little chance to respond. Both of you guys are out of control there. Our number is 877-876-PHIL. We're talking here with Larry Grover and with Robert Green. We're discussing the debate this evening. We are discussing President Obama and Jan Brewer. We're talking about the prospects of the Newt Gingrich campaign following his endorsement of a moon base of some kind, which seemed to be a point of some mirth and contention in the debate. 877-876-PHIL, the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. Be right back.
Truth is our bitch. The Phil Hendry Show. Bill Hendry Show.
Welcome back. You're the world famous Phil Hendry Show. 877-876-PHIL, 877-876-7445. And we're online at philhendryshow.com. Online, of course, on Phil TV and HD, so you can check us out there. By the way, check into our merchandise shop. We have not only the Teds of Beverly Hills hoodies and our coffee mugs and our shot glasses and our baseball caps and our T-shirts, and soon we will have our Bobby Dooley item that'll be up and ready. But all of the best of Phil Hendry Show CDs are available for download. So you can order the CD, the physical CD, and of course it'll get to you. The original artwork in the original packaging. It's never been out of the package. And we even autograph our 2000-2001s. But if you just want that material and you want a quick delivery on everything, man, you can download it from the website right now, as a matter of fact, if you go over to philhendryshow.com. So that we are making available to you as well. More downloads to come. And somebody said that they wanted us to make Iron Swine downloadable. Maybe we'll do that. 877-876-PHIL, 877-876-7445 is our number. Robert Green and Larry Grover on the line with us. The last gentleman that was talking, and we'll get to some more phone calls here, but the last gentleman was talking was saying that you were making Gingrich sound much worse than he sounded tonight, Larry.
Well, Phil, I don't know how much, I don't know what he was saying. Maybe he feels that the gentleman, with all due respect, sounded like he came from China, or I don't know.
He was Indian. He sounded like he came from India.
Yeah, he sounded as if he was a Indian, South Asia.
South Asia? What is that? You know, we're not talking here, Phil, like it's the Civil War. You know, hey, I'm from South Asia.
Southern Asia. That's a perfectly appropriate term.
All right, fine, but I mean, I don't think he understands the American mindset. To tell the American people, hi, I'm a conservative, and oh yeah, I'd like to spend trillions of dollars on a moon base, is a blatant, I would even characterize it as a dirty, and I would even go so far as to say a dirty, filthy lie.
Oh, come on, will you?
No. Well, what do you mean, come on? I mean, why would you say that to people unless you're trying to pull the wool over their eyes?
Well, you've gone so far as to say that this has killed his campaign.
I think it murdered it. I think if Gingrich's campaign were an infant, that comment kidnapped it. I hate to say this, Phil, because I've admired Newt Gingrich for many years, but
If Newt Gingrich's campaign were an infant child, that comment kidnapped it and put it in a pickling barrel. Oh, my God.
God almighty.
I'm sorry. Where would you come up with a comment like that? Because that's what happened to the Lindbergh baby.
You must have a screw loose to come up with a comparison like that.
I've got a screw loose. Gingrich was the guy that wanted to slip a helmet on your... He put a moon helmet on every man, woman, and child in America, and I'm crazy. It was a comment he made to space workers, sir. Nothing more.
877-876-PHIL. Let me go over to a phone call. Here is Mary. You're on the Phil Hendry Show. Mary, go ahead. Mary? Maybe I don't have Mary there anymore. Let's go to Peter. Peter, you're on the Phil Hendry Show. Go ahead, please.
Yes, sir. Thank you for taking my call. So I'm a physician, and I'm a Republican, and I just wanted to say that if anyone spent any time going to an intensive care unit recently, they know that there's medical monitoring, and there's all the monitors that are being used in modern medicine today, and most of those, people don't realize, came from the space program. And you know, you may not realize this, and your consultants may not realize this, but you know, Obama has canceled most of our space program. I don't believe that that's in the best interests of American technocracy. You know, for a while, if you thought about German engineering, you thought about cars. If you thought about Japanese engineering, you thought about buildings that don't shake apart in earthquakes. But if you talked about American technocracy, you talked about a man on the moon. And you know, there's a lot of technological
spin-offs. Can I interrupt the gentleman, because you're quoting a record that was popular in the 1970s that. I'm familiar with that. It was a Canadian journalist, Gordon Sinclair, who wrote those words. And so you should credit him. You shouldn't just say it like you brought it up.
That doesn't make any difference. The gentleman, No, you don't have to apologize, Peter. You don't have to apologize for anything.
The gentleman was making.
The Americans by Gordon. What difference does it make?
Well, he's talking like, hey, here's a.
Would you let the man finish, please?
The Americans were known for the hegemony in space. And, you know, technology is going to get us out of this doldrum that we're in. And, you know, if we inspire Americans, if we put some money into education instead of some of the things that we're doing right now, and we inspire Americans and we start to build again and employ people in technological fields, we may bring us out of these doldrums. I was inspired by that, just like Americans were inspired by JFK, who said, we're going to put man on the moon in this decade. That sounded ridiculous back in 1961, but, you know, it turns out that we proved that.
I want to jump in, Phil, because I've got some perspective on this. I may be a little bit older than this gentleman. And
You can do that, but the interrupting here.
Well, Phil, do I get to say something? Because I'm the Gingrich supporter. So I want to say something.
Go ahead, Bob.
What the gentleman may not remember is right after we landed on the moon and we got the Apollo project up and running, the United States went into a series of three recessions that lasted through the 80s and early 90s. And the recession of the early 70s was particularly brutal. We faced the, on top of that, the gas cutoff from the Middle East. So I don't know what you're talking about. We went into a recession right in the midst of the of the boom. In fact, the World Trade Center, they weren't even sure where they were going to be able to build it because we had such a bad economic time.
Well,
so
I was alive.
The moon landing didn't do really anything for the economy.
Secondly,
they had to take a bath when they got out of there.
And
they were afraid of germs from the moon.
Congress of the United States canceled
the moon
program.
Was a bad
and
thing.
And unfortunately, that was a very short-sighted thing to do.
Are you aware of that?
By blocking the American space program, we just basically took all the technology that we had developed to that point.
They had to take a bath after they got back from the moon.
The Democratic Congress who just canceled the space program.
Right. What are you saying?
The Democratic Congress didn't cancel the space program until after the recession hit.
In 1973, the gasoline embargo.
The recession hit, and then they canceled it because the recession hit, because your space program didn't do anything. Now, number two, are you aware that those guys, when they got back from the moon, they had to take a bath because they were afraid of the fact that they had moon bugs?
Will you hold? All right, everybody be quiet. Stop. I want everyone to be quiet here for a second because Everyone's talking over each other.
Well, Mr. Henry, Mr. Green won't let this man finish. He's talking about the technology. You're the guy that said that Gingrich is an idiot for wanting to go to the moon.
Yes, but I didn't know all this other stuff happened that this guy's talking about.
Are you both aware of the fact that when they came back from the moon, they had to take a bath because they were afraid there were moon bugs on them? Are you aware of that?
Of course I am. They had quarantine, right. But it
now,
turned out not to be.
Let me ask you this question. Let
there
me ask
you
this question.
That we learned
why did they take
program.
Why did they take a sidearm with them to the moon?
Say that again, sir.
What?
Why did they take a pistol? Why was there a sidearm allowed on the lunar module?
A sidearm?
Yes, a pistol. Why?
Probably because if there was, you know, and I went to a university where Rob Lowe was, he was the director of Apollo. He said that he was.
Oh, Rob Lowe was.
Rob Lowe was the director of the Apollo space program. He was the dean of my college.
No, he's a movie actor.
I'm answering the question. One of the reasons
he's a movie actor.
Would you hold on, please? Now we've got to take a break. Hold on, Peter. We'll be right with you. The world famous, there were moon bugs, and they took a sidearm with them on the. It's the world. World famous Phil Hendry Show.
I wanted to know all about that, and he won't let the man talk.
Oh, why don't you shut up?
Larry's out of control.
Phil Hendry.
Bill Henry
Show.
All right, hold on. We're back here with Larry Grover and with Bob Green as we continue discussing tonight the debate, as well as we had a little conversation about Obama and Jan Brewer, and perhaps it's well that we have not continued that. Larry and Bob with us. We also want to get back to our callers. Larry, you were making a point about what?
Idea you were bringing up, Bob, you brought up they had a service revolver on the lunar module. That is correct. Well, the reason was is because they needed to have some kind of a weapon in case one of the crew members, for whatever reason, became a danger or a threat to the others. That is true, but you'd be surprised at how many people thought that meant they were going to encounter moon people. And I think, Larry, that's where you are tonight. You think that we're, you know, I was angry. Now, I want to say this, please. All right.
Go ahead.
I was angry when they returned from the moon and they had quarantined them. It was my feeling that the quarantine would not be sufficient. And I was angry they did not find any microbe or any extraterrestrial infectious bacteria or microbe. And I was angry because I had predicted, as had others, that there was no way any human form of a decontamination would be able to cleanse or clean a moon microbe. I was angry because that was not the case. I don't know what you're talking about.
I don't either.
No, I'm telling you, you said to me they took a pistol because they were afraid they needed to have defense.
That's what I heard.
That's right. And I agree with you. And there were some who said that they took the pistol because they were afraid of moon creatures, which was ridiculous. But I was angry, and I still am.
Are you angry that they didn't find moon microbes?
I was, because I'd written a paper saying that going to the moon would be a holocaust for the human race, a holocaust, because the moon had these microbes.
Well, Larry, you know...
And that's why I said what I said about the pistol.
All right, that's fine, but we are in the year 2011 now. We've been to the moon many times. We understand that there's no microbes up there. The moon is a big rock, and we're beginning to understand, at least our solar system, that really what we have out there are big, fat things that sit there with gas, bubble away, and we just happen to be on the one planet that's inhabitable. And I think that that is essentially what our challenge is. Let's go to some phone calls here. We've had Mary hanging on the line. Mary, go ahead. You're on the Phil Henry Show with Larry Grover and Bob Green.
Hi, how are you? Well, first
Fine.
Of all, just two things I want to talk about. Newt Gingrich had said that he was going to get the private sector involved in funding the aerospace program.
That's right.
And
that's right.
We're a capitalist nation. We believe in free enterprise. If the Russians can send a charge, $22 million, to send somebody up in the space for a few hours and come back down, I'm sure we can figure out something, too. So I didn't hear the debate. I don't get CNN's, so I don't think that a lot of the comments...
Are you a Gingrich supporter, ma'am? Are you a Gingrich supporter, or are you a Romney supporter?
I'm not supporting anybody right now. I haven't decided. Second of all, before we get into this yelling, screaming match, which I'm not going to get involved in.
I don't want to yell, ma'am. I just wanted to make the point about the moon microbes.
All right, we've made that point. Go ahead, Mary.
Okay. The governor of Arizona, it was a still photo that we saw. I have not seen any video clips at all. You can get caught in very unflattering photos, and the liberal media is surely not going to paint a Republican in a good light. So they're going to do everything they can. Second of all, if she was, quote, unquote, wagging her finger, she does not warrant getting slapped across the face, and I think that would be called assault and battery.
Well, ma'am, if I could, this is Robert Green. I was not the one that said that. Mr. Grover did.
And I will repeat. As conservatives, Mary, we need to put our best foot forward if we're going to defeat Barack Obama. And when we have one of our own wagging her finger and looking like the Wicked Witch of the West, screaming at a black man, oh, my God.
Did you see her wagging her finger?
I saw a photograph of her with her big mouth hanging open and her finger waving around in the president's face.
No.
And
her finger was not moving. It was a still photo.
Her finger's up in his face, which is very disrespectful.
First of all, she's a lot shorter than him. She had a finger up, that's true. She could have been saying, and I want to make this point, and just...
Well, you don't put your finger in a president's face, and that's number one. And number two... He's the president of the United States. Is he not allowed to defend himself?
Hold on, Mary. Let me see if we have a picture. Let me just see if there's... I was looking at Google News, and I have... Here's one here. Hold on. All right. Her finger is chest high. Okay?
Her finger should not even be visible.
First of all, the President of the United States, I don't think needs to be defended against a small woman.
I think he has a right to defend himself.
He's got special services all around him, Secret Service all around him, that if they thought that she was at any kind of threat to him, they would have been on top of her in a second.
I will say this to you, Mary. This is Bob Green. She does have her mouth open in a very unflattering way, and I don't know if she was yelling at the president. The finger, you're right, is not in his face. It is chest high.
Okay, if the president felt that he was being threatened
at any time and the Secret Service didn't move, what he's going to have to slap her across the face.
First of all, have you ever been in an airport when an airplane comes in, especially a 747, and the engines are winding down? You have to yell over the engines.
You can yell, but you don't have to stick your finger up in a guy's eye.
No, wait a minute. You just said, and I'm looking at the picture, the finger is, look, I don't necessarily think you should be pointing your finger on people, but her finger is not up in his face is what I'm saying.
She's got her finger up in the air. And it's not even pointed at him. It's pointed up away from him, more or less. Isn't it?
Well, But my question, Mary, is if the Secret Service can't hear what's going on because of the jet engines, but the president feels an imminent danger, he would have to close his fist and literally strike her.
Is this Phil?
Why do you think that's unusual?
Is this Phil talking?
Well, Larry, why do you think that she had to do that? Why do you think he'd have to do that?
I think he'd have to do that because the Secret Service didn't hear her threatening him.
She wasn't threatening him.
Hold on a second. The Secret Service goes by body language, too. They don't just go by what they hear. They go by body language. Come on, guys. Give me a break here. When Reagan was
Well, if that was the case, if that was the case, they should have shot her.
What did you just say?
I said if that was the case, they would have shot her.
Why would they shoot her?
Well, obviously they were there, and they saw the situation, and they didn't feel it was a threat. Obviously they saw it, and they didn't go by a single snap frame that you're not seeing the whole picture. These are trained professionals. These men know what they're doing, and women, they know what they're doing. They see the whole picture. You're not.
Well, let me jump in here, Mary. This is Phil. There, at no time was the president's life. This is a ridiculous conversation we're having.
Of course there's no time.
If you want to talk about whether or not somebody is rude or somebody shouldn't be pointing, perhaps we could have that conversation. But this was not something that was a threat to the president.
Absolutely.
And in
not.
Fact, the comment that was released by the White House was a nice comment. The president said, we look forward to going back. We look forward to talking to Governor Brewer. There was nothing in the comment from the White House.
I think they were taking the high road. But, all I'm saying is, as a conservative, we don't need this kind of trouble. We don't have to have Jan Brewer arrested. We'll never get elected.
We don't need people running other people down when they weren't there and they didn't see the situation. You're taking a liberal media photograph and blowing it totally out of proportion. You don't know what happened. You weren't there. You didn't see it. And I don't think everybody should be commenting on it.
Here's the story from Governor Brewer said that she, quote, meant no disrespect when she pointed a finger at President Obama during an intense discussion, but the Republican governor says the Democratic president showed disrespect for her by abruptly ending their conversation.
Oh, boy, that's the dumbest thing she could have said right when we're trying to get the White House, and that old alcoholic...
Whoa!
What?
You call her an alcoholic?
Governor Brewer, I think everybody knows that.
Boy, I got to tell you something, man. You're way out of line with that comment. Mary, thank you for your call. 877-876-PHIL. I think you stunned that lady into silence.
Yeah, I think she was just absolutely... we're not asking you, are we, Green? What bug got up your rear end? Everybody's giving you compliments. Oh, yeah, Mr. Green, you're so calm, cool, and collected. You're so... I am. You've been coming off like a psycho, talking about moon landings, talking about moon bugs. I'm talking about the very germane topics of the day. And that's another thing. You're almost crying like a baby. Excuse me? I'm talking about the germane topics of the day. That's the way you sounded. And then you just called Governor Jan Brewer of Arizona an alcoholic. That is the final straw. Mr. Hendry, Mr. Grover, I bid you a very fond evening and a very fond, adieu. I think it's how they... get lost.
Are you there, Larry?
Yeah, I'm here.
So what did we have? We had Mr. Bob Green hang up. All right. I think it's about time to take a break then. 877-876-PHIL. I bid you a fond adieu. That's what he said. Anyway, the world-famous Phil Hendry Show will be right back.
Truth is our bitch. The Phil Hendry Show. Listening to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
And welcome back here to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show, 877-876-PHIL. Larry Grover's the only one that's left here, as Robert Green basically hung the phone up on us. And I'm not exactly sure why. I think...
if I may, Phil, it sounded to me like Bob was angry that he felt that I had mischaracterized him. He felt that... we were not taking, I forget, to be honest with you.
I do, too.
You know, and he hung his phone up, probably thinking he was making a real big point and that we would remember him forever. And I couldn't tell you, if you tortured me, what he was talking about.
Well, I wouldn't be that, I wouldn't quite, you know, be that floral, but I don't remember what he was talking about. Just to put a capper on this Obama-Brewer exchange on the airline or the airport tarmac, I don't know where this was. Was it in Arizona? But apparently they got to talking as he was being greeted by her, which happens. Governors greet presidents on airline airport tarmacs. And apparently he said something about the book that she'd written, and they had a disagreement. And a photographer caught that picture. And
by the way, you know, so I can say, I've been a photographer, Phil, and you have a motor drive camera, and all you do is click, and it goes click, 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 click. And if you get a picture like that, it makes you look like you're a Pulitzer Prize winner, but the fact is you got 900 pictures. You know what I'm saying?
Right. I mean, you're, yeah, okay.
So the photographer, I just want people to know the guy that took that picture, we're not talking about some Ansel Adams, you know, Mr. Big Shot. I've had a very tough night tonight.
Yeah, I know, and you're making all of these points. You and Green both, you made that point with that one man about, well, you know, yeah, that was Gordon Sinclair, that wasn't you. And
well, the guy called up trying to make it sound like he wrote that.
No, he did not. The man just made the comment, which I think was very, very appropriate about American technology. Let's go over to Chad. Chad, you're on the Phil Hendry Show here with Larry Grover. Chad? Maybe this is Chad here. Chad, go ahead. You're on the Phil Hendry Show.
Hey. I just want to know is the last two talk shows.
That's tough.
You ain't
calling me a retard?
Huh?
That's what you're calling me?
No, I'm talking about the your talk shows, your radio, the people that call in.
I'm calling in, and I'm the guest. And I said that if President Obama felt that he was being threatened by that woman, then he should take one step back, give her full warning that as President of the United States, he's about to engage in a defensive move, and then slap her face.
I'm gonna call you a coward. Ain't no man gonna put no hand on no woman. That's a coward.
No. If you know, no woman gets to stick her finger. No woman gets to tell the president what to do.
They don't want
who says?
Or not.
Who says she's telling him what to do?
Hey, quit calling people. Look, that's the pot calling the kettle black. Quit calling people a retard.
That's just
especially
like
when you may be one.
Y'all cry over everything. You got to be the dumbest person in the world going on a talk show and talking about a woman.
Yeah, it's the President of the United States. Let's say you were sticking your finger in the President's face, he'd be able to take one step back and then just a roundhouse kick to your head.
I'm a guy. He can hit a guy.
Are you sure?
I said, I'm a guy. That ain't no problem. But hitting a woman, you got
to
be.
No, you still have to hit a woman because as the President, you don't know what she's going to pull.
It don't matter.
Yes, it does.
No, it don't.
Oh, are you trying to tell me that women have never carried out? Well, I shouldn't say.
Let's not get cute. Don't start talking about this woman. This is the governor of the state of Arizona. She did not pose a threat to the president at all. So I don't want you to start talking about assassination plots.
I'm just telling this guy. Is he saying that women are not capable of, you know, slugging a guy or something?
They are capable of hitting people and stuff.
Yeah. You've got that right, Cobb.
You got to be a better person to walk off. Now, if a man get up and you say, yeah, but a woman, you got to be a low-down coward to hit a woman in the face.
Or you can turn around and walk off. What if she's laughing at you? What if she's laughing? We all know the worst thing a woman can do is laugh at a guy, right? You agree, right?
Let her laugh. What's it going to do to you?
That's the lowest thing a woman can do.
Are you going to go climb in the closet and cry about it because a woman's laughing at you?
Are you telling me that you can take that? Go ahead. Sure. Go ahead. Tell me that you're able to take it when a woman laughs at you.
I can take that because I'm man enough to take that because that ain't going to hurt me as a woman. Wow.
Oh, boy. So you're telling me that as soon as your pants hit the floor and she starts laughing,
Wait a minute, man. That's not what we're talking about.
Well, yeah. I ain't got to worry about my pants hitting the floor if she go to laughing. That ain't no problem here.
Wait a second. What are you talking about? Were you an Easy Rider?
Okay, listen, Chad, thank you very much. Great call, buddy. Appreciate your call. Our number, were you an Easy Rider? 877.
I swear to God, he was one of those guys in the cafe going, look like a gorilla love in.
You're having yourself a good time here, Larry. That's great. I'm glad to hear it. But, you know, I have a serious radio show that I have to conduct.
Look, Bill, I'm still here. I'm here. Please keep that in mind. Robert Greene bailed on you, but I'm still here.
Yeah, you're still here, and we've gone from talking about the debate tonight to Jan Brewer posing a threat to the president when she was putting her finger in his face, and he's supposed to take, quote, what is this one step back?
I'm talking about a normal defensive maneuver as the commander-in-chief. He has the Secret Service around him. They have not heard or seen any threat, but the president is feeling as if perhaps he needs a little space between him and the governor of Arizona. The standard way is to take, if I were training the president, and I know a little bit about this. And
well, were you in the military or something?
I don't want to, I can't really get into it.
Well, were you a cop?
I can't get into it.
This is Mrs. Grover.
Mother, would you please, Mother?
Give me the phone, Larry. I pay for the phone, Phil.
Yes.
Larry's so full of it, his eyes are brown.
Give me the phone. I'm going to tell people are you telling people that I was not, that I didn't work for that security company?
Oh, Larry imagines himself to be a big man.
Oh, I swear I'm going to slap you. Now, I've been talking about slapping women tonight, Mother. Would you like me to do it to you?
Do you think you're going to slap me?
Yes, I will.
Watch this.
Oh! Uh-huh.
I had to hit him, Phil. I'll go to bed.
You slugged Larry.
Yes, I did.
I didn't do that.
Go to bed, Larry.
I didn't do it.
I said to go to bed.
No, not again. Ow.
Okay, good night.
Phil, are you interested in some Girl Scout?
Phil Hendry Show, next hour. It'll be fine. I just tested.
Ow. That hurt. I saw an adult film once, Phil, where the lady went,
Phil Hendry. That's nice.
Broadcasting from the shores of El Pacifico, Phil Hendry.
And welcome back to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show every night till 1 o'clock here on the West Coast and 4 a.m. on the East Coast. This news, talk, and entertainment show knows what it's talking about. Truth is our bitch, and we go places other talk shows would like to go, but unfortunately, they ain't got it, man. They don't have the, well, they can't do it. Our number here, always 877-876-PHIL. Our online presence is at philhendryshow.com. We have live streaming video of our show right now and obviously the audio. On Phil TV in HD, and we have other little features on Phil TV in HD occasionally. Like, for instance, we will have for you Sunday Football with Phil when the Super Bowl occurs 1 week from Sunday. You can tune in and join us for that. Also, get yourself a backstage pass and, you know, listen to thousands of hours of archives over there, and plus we have our souvenir shop. Now, we got Bud Dickman and Robert Leonard along the way here in our news and information hour. What, bro? Which one of you guys wants to talk here?
Well, I mean, I want to make a comment.
Go ahead.
I don't think that, I don't think those two guys you had tonight, I don't think that was good.
Yeah, I didn't like it either.
Why?
Well, I mean, just a couple of knuckleheads, you know, and I think you gotta kick them out.
You had them on too long.
I had them on too long?
Yeah.
All right, well, I mean, my whole thing was to go from the conversation about...
No, whoa, hold on, man. Don't go explain it. We just had it on too long.
Yeah, the whole thing about, like...
Wait a second. What do you mean, don't... I'm going to explain it. We were going to go from the debate to the,
Yeah, the lady. The lady.
The lady. You mean the governor of Arizona?
Yeah, but that one guy, Larry Grover, is that a guy?
Yeah.
He sounded like he had a developmental disability or something.
Yeah, he didn't sound like it's too tightly wrapped because he's going. He was talking about the moon landing and the bugs.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah. I mean, what is that about, man?
Yeah, he sounded like he might have lost it a little bit there.
I mean, that immediately didn't give it no credibility.
Well, what are you going to do, man? You got a guy on the show, you're interviewing them, and then, of course, Mr. Green just went ahead and bailed, you know?
I don't blame the guy for bailing, man. He bailed out because that guy, Grover, is going, it was disappointing that they didn't bring no moonbug back. I didn't understand that.
He didn't want to bring a moonbug back on account of getting a Holocaust going.
You know what? He sounded to me like one of those kooky guys that back in the day, they didn't call them bloggers. They just called them kooky guys, you know. Well, we didn't have blogs back then, so you had people like, who was that woman that shot Andy Warhol? She was a real nutcase, and she wrote something called The Scum Manifesto, the Society for Cutting Up Men.
Who was that?
She was a lady that shot Andy Warhol. She tried to kill Andy Warhol. She wasn't successful, and she wound up homeless and eventually just died. It was a very tragic and she's a very sick woman, I think, obviously. But she had this manifesto, and now it is making the rounds online, the Society for Cutting Up Men.
Called Scum?
Right. Now, if she were alive today, if she was doing her thing today, this is going to sound really scary, and I could be very wrong here. She would have had an outlet that she didn't have. I'm not saying that she would not have shot Andy Warhol. She shot, actually, when she went into his studio, she shot more than Andy Warhol. She shot, I think, two men. She shot Andy Warhol and one other man who was trying to get away. And then she had this Scum Manifesto. It's possible, I'm saying, that had she had the internet to put her stupid-ass blog out there, maybe she would have felt...
What about that, what's the guy, the Unabomber?
Yeah, that guy had a manifesto, too.
Yes, the Unabomber. I don't know, but that's back then when there was a nut that had a bunch of gobbledygook that he wanted to say to people, you'd have to publish this thing somehow. You'd mail, what they did is they mailed it to lots of people, you know. I used to get mail when I was, in radio before we had the internet. I would get these big envelopes with big, huge manuscripts from some nut, you know, and I'd try to read it, and...
What was it?
It was just gibberish, it was nut talk, you know, and especially, I don't want to say libertarians are crazy, you're not, and I shouldn't put it in the same category, but if libertarians were the people who were sort of starting out then, and they would send you these big, long things about their political party, and nobody ever read it because it was just too freaking dull to read. But with the internet and with the advent of blogs came an entirely new possibility for those people. And it's intriguing to think, and I don't want to, I'm not drawing any conclusions, I'm just thinking out loud. Had this woman, whatever the hell her name was, Valerie something, the woman that shot Andy Warhol, or Ted Kaczynski, had they the ability to publish this garbage on blogs and put it online, do you suppose they would have been motivated to be as violent?
Yeah, I think so, because that one guy, he flew the airplane into that building and everything.
Yeah, that's true. Joe, whatever.
What was his name? The guy, Stack. Was that his name, Stack?
Yeah, Joe Stack. He had the internet and everything. He still wanted to fly a plane into a building. Also, Osama bin Laden. He could have had a blog.
He did have a blog, which, you know, only people that spoke Arabic could read it. But, all right, yeah, good point, you know.
Yeah, so I don't think it made no difference at all, man, other than the fact that, you know, if there had been an internet, then maybe more people would have read that garbage, you know.
Well, I don't read a lot of those blogs. Not because I feel anything about them one way or the other, but I don't have the time to... I literally don't have the time to go and just read blogs, man. I mean, I'm either on... line. I'm reading stuff that I want to read, you know.
What do you want to read?
I want to read stuff that's happening, okay? In other words, I want to read history. I want to read the actual stuff. I'm not really into... this is probably going to sound bad. I'm not into opinion, you know?
Well, why aren't you into opinion, man?
It's not... I am into opinions. Yes, I shouldn't say that I'm not, but to me, the real job is to get educated first on what the hell it is you're talking about, right? I mean, I don't expect anybody to listen to this radio show and take away from it an opinion. Like, oh, wow, Phil just said that. I can't, you know, don't do it. Don't do it. So I don't think that what I have to say in terms of an opinion should matter so much as I ought to be factual. I need to be, at least have my facts right. So if I say this happened or that happened, you know. And so that's what I like to read. I like to read, here's what happened. This is what happened. Here's the thing. This happened, and this happened, and this happened. Am I right all the time? I don't know. Probably not. But I try to be. And then the whole opinion thing can happen.
Yeah, but the only reason why people are listening to talk radio so they can learn something.
So they can learn something. No, people listen to the radio for the same reason why they watch TV. They want to be entertained. They want to be, yes, they want information. It's all stuff that keeps them interested, keeps their mind active, keeps their mind off of other crap. All right, let's quit speculating about a bunch of dung. Now, we were talking about the Obama exchange with Governor Brewer. According to the Washington Post, this is an article that was filed by David Nakamura and Rachel Weiner.
Let me see that.
Pull that out of my hand, bud.
You said Weiner.
So?
Want to find out what the name Weiner's right.
So what do you mean you want to find out if it's right or not?
You said Weiner.
Well, what are you all of a sudden? The FCC there, see?
It's Weiner.
W-E-I-N-E-R. That's exactly how that guy... Get out of here. Don't pull this out of my hand, okay?
What are you pointing at?
President Obama's raw exchange with the governor of Arizona on an airport tarmac this week did more than overshadow his carefully stage-managed road trip to trumpet his State of the Union goals. This was in Aurora, Colorado? No, it was in Phoenix. The discussion revealed a testy side of the president's personality that is at odds with his public image as no-drama Obama, reviving criticism that he's unwilling to be second-guessed or even entertain another point of view. Now, isn't that interesting? That's not what the public perception was, Washington Post. Shortly after stepping off of Air Force One on Wednesday in Phoenix, Obama challenged Governor Brewer over characterizations she made of him in a recent book. His reaction coming one day after he used a State of the Union address to call for a renewed spirit of political bipartisanship amid the nation's economic woes has exposed him to accusations that he's not interested in working with Republicans. Now, you'll notice that the writer says it's exposed him to accusations. He's not saying that there have been accusations. It's exposed him. This is a classic example of reporting as opinion, or the other way around, opinion as reporting. This is more and more what we see passing for journalism. Brewer, whose scorpions for breakfast faults Obama for pandering to Hispanic voters in his immigration policy, said the president mentioned the book unprompted after she invited him to meet with her to discuss Arizona's comeback. He was somewhat thin-skinned and a little tense, to say the least, Brewer told Phoenix radio station KFYI on Thursday. I went there with good intentions, talking about Arizona and how I could give some assistance to him. White House Press Secretary Jay Coffey scoffed at the notion that a deeper meaning was to be gleaned from the brief exchange, calling it political theater, and Obama told ABC News anchor Diane Sawyer in an interview that it was a classic example of things getting blown out of proportion. Denying that he was tense during the encounter, as Brewer described, Obama said, laughing, that he is usually accused of not being intense enough. So what we have here is from the mouth of Brewer, Obama was tense, Obama was this, and Obama was that. Obama's thin skin. Nobody heard this. Just Brewer and Obama. And the first thing out of her mouth is that he was this, that, something else. Now, why does she feel the need to say something about that if no one heard it?
They saw the picture.
They saw the picture? Are you telling me that? And that's, now, I'm not saying you're wrong, bud. But if nobody could hear it and nobody could hear it, then what you have is Brewer going on a radio show in Phoenix and saying, blah, 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 blah. Oh, and by the way, Obama's a real tense jackass, and,
Yeah, but they might have asked her.
Well, what are they going to ask her? In other words, oh, wow, you met the president. Was he an ass? What kind of question is that? So something had to have been in her mind, or in the mind of the interviewer, for her to come out with, he was tense, and he talked to me about the book. It must have been the picture. You're right, bud. And the picture doesn't look good for Governor Brewer. She's got her big fat mouth wide open. She's got her finger up in the air, whether or not she's pointing it on him or not. I'm saying these things not necessarily as an Obama fan, but as a fan of decorum, the presidency. I'm a real, as I said today on Twitter, I'm an old-fashioned Americano, man. I'm into respect for the president, the flag, say the pledge.
Yeah, wipe with one square.
Wipe with one square. You get out of here, wipe with one square.
You did say that.
Yes, but not for repeating on the air. So, you know, that's my motivation. That's not about politics. If it's political, I tend to agree more with Governor Brewer. You know, it's gotten out of hand. The freaking immigration thing's gotten out of hand. The illegal immigration thing is way out of hand. The country's at risk. We know that people are at risk. And you got to do something, right? I just didn't like that picture. Now, the president said it was no big deal. Brewer, on the other hand, says he was tense. He took exception to her book. He was thin-skinned. She's making all of these characterizations about the president. So I believe that she was doing that to defend herself against a picture in which she doesn't look all that great. Now, according to the press secretary, the president told Brewer the description in the book of a meeting they had at 2010 in the Oval Office was not accurate. At the time, Brewer told reporters that her meeting with Obama was cordial, but in the book she described him as patronizing and said he lectured her. Over the past year, as his relations with congressional Republicans have soured, Obama's tried to cast the GOP as rigid ideologues whose allegiances to Tea Party conservatives has nearly caused financial catastrophe. First, when House Speaker John Boehner walked away from Obama's good bargain during the summer debt ceiling negotiations, and again when Republicans grudgingly adopted the president's proposed extension of a payroll tax cut at the 11th hour. But Republicans have painted a different picture. During the debt ceiling fight, House Majority Leader Eric Cantor told reporters the president snapped at him in a negotiating session, saying, "Don't call my bluff," and abruptly walked out. Republicans have more recently cast Obama's We Can't Wait campaign of taking executive action without congressional approval as evidence that he has chosen to ignore lawmakers. They characterized his appointment of Richard Cordray to head a financial consumer watchdog agency, even though the Senate rejected the nomination, as the act of an imperial president intent on imposing his will. Well, now, wait a second. The appointment of Richard Cordray to head a financial consumer watchdog agency, that is not an office that is subject to the advice and consent of the Senate or the Congress. We have to break? Oh.
Yeah, you got to break. You're way long, man.
Well, I don't want to break. No, we have to break. I'm sorry. All right, so we'll take a break. Thank you, Dan.
Yeah, I'm trying to get your attention.
Well, I was very into reading the thing. And we'll be right back. The world famous Phil Hendry Show.
Truth is
really
our
blew
bitch.
It.
The Phil Hendry Show.
Almost cost us millions of dollars.
Famous Phil Hendry Show.
World famous Phil Hendry Show. David G. Hall joining us here from Pasadena tonight. Yeah, David.
You know, I don't think you're making yourself very clear. What do you mean, this Jan Brewer? What are you talking about with Jan Brewer?
What am I talking about with Jan Brewer? What I'm saying is this: Jan Brewer was the first one to make it to a microphone after this exchange.
How do you know that?
Because her version of this was the first one to come out, her version of this conversation. Now, the only question I have is the following. If nobody can hear what they're talking about on that run, on that tarmac, and they can't, there's jets going overhead, and they were far enough away from any of the reporters, there were people taking pictures, then nobody could hear what they were talking about. So why does Jan Brewer then go on a radio show and start basically, you know, breaking the confidence of the conversation she had with the president? Nobody could hear it, and now she's on a radio show talking about it.
Well, she's talking about the conversation she had with Obama, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Why does she have to talk about that?
Because it's part of the news.
Nobody heard what they were saying, is what I'm saying.
Nobody heard them.
Hey, hold on, bud. Shut up. I'll take it from Henry, not you.
Yeah, but you're not getting... You're not...
Shut up, bud. Now, what are you saying?
Look, at David, I don't have a lot of time here, okay?
Oh, come on. All I want to do is...
Get out of here.
You hung up on Mr. Hall.
Yeah, have him call back and I'll hang up again. What am I saying? It's easy enough to figure out. If she's the first one that makes it to a microphone and the first thing she talks about is how tense he was, what a pain in the ass he was. She didn't say that, but she said he's tense, he's thin-skinned, and he's bringing up her book. That's like me coming in from a conversation that I had with somebody that nobody heard, and the first thing I start telling you about this person is they're this, they're that, they're this, and it's all negative. And you're asking yourself, well, gee, I'd like to hear their version. I mean, that's one side. And the Washington Post reports this. You know?
The Washington Post used to be a liberal newspaper, too.
I don't know what the Washington Post, I don't want to characterize the editorial policy of the newspaper, but when a couple of reporters, and there were two reporters on the story, decide to take Governor Brewer's version of events and run with it as factual, okay, then I think you got a problem, man. And again, I'm not, you know, this is not politics now, this is reporting. And this is versions, and this is something you need to be aware of, folks, as news consumers. Why did we first hear version of this from Jan Brewer? And it's no big thing, but it's a great example of how news gets reported. She was the first person to come out with a version of it. The Washington Post runs with it. And I think the reason why she started talking about it, somebody at the radio station must have said, hey, we got a picture of you, and you look like some kind of a real witch on a broom with your big fat mouth hanging open. Why? You didn't put it that way.
Man, are you going to talk to a governor like that?
Talk to a governor? Why was she talking to the president? The point is, they probably saw the picture or somebody saw it and said, what was going on? Oh, well, gee. So she had to say something. The picture doesn't make her look good. The picture doesn't make her look good. So she has to say something, and naturally she's going to say what she said, which was, the president didn't treat me with respect, and the president was this, and the president was that, and the president was something else. Obama comes back and says, it was no biggie, it wasn't that big of a thing, I made a point about something, and you guys are blowing it up out of proportion. So,
Well, you still think she was wagging her finger?
Yes, I do. Yes, I do. I think she was wagging her finger, and I think that she looked to be a little disrespectful there, and the president, I think, for his part, just say, you know, whatever, you know, no biggie. And so I think he was showing a little bit of class there. I just think, you know, we're never, ever, ever going to get anywhere in this country, man, if we keep on with this personality thing, man, because that's what this is about. Obama's a this, and he's a that, and he's a this, and he's a that, and, you know, and the rest of these people are this, that, man. Let's get this country working and hard charging again, man. And forget about all these little games, these personality games people are playing. Even though I just said she looked like a witch.
Exactly.
Thank you. We'll be right back here on the world famous Phil Hendry Show.
We'll be right back. Stay around. I'm David G. Hall.
Phil Hendry. Listening to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
Hey, welcome back here to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. And it is our News and Information Hour with Bud Dickman and Robert Leonard, our website, philhendryshow.com. And I mentioned on the pre-show tonight when our episode of... Did I mention on the pre-show when the episode of
Yeah, you did.
Of Modern Family airs? Okay. And we'll air it for our radio audience tomorrow night. But if you're a backstage pass holder, you already know. And if not, we'll mention again in the pre-show tomorrow night. But it's going to be during sweeps. And then very, very happy and proud to say that I'm going to be working on maybe one or two episodes of New Girl.
That show's a big show, man.
Yeah, well, so's Modern Family, you know. So it's pretty cool, man, to be a part of two hit shows like that. With an eye on Asia and a constrained wallet, U.S. Defense Secretary Leon Panetta offered a plan to create a smaller and leaner military that will be rapidly deployable and technologically advanced. Well, that's pretty much what the thinking has been now for the last 10 years. Because that's not only something that is perhaps cheaper, and maybe not, because...
Well, you see, maybe not.
Well, I mean, we may not have as many men in uniform, but the technology this guy's talking about, because I watch Ultimate Weapons on Military Channel, so...
Yeah, I do too, man. They have some pretty good ones.
Yeah. I'm kidding, but some of the stuff they have on there...
Like that one robot, the one that rolls around.
What are you talking about, man? Oh, you're talking... Oh, I know what he's talking about. There's a little tiny... It almost looks like one of those robots in... Star Wars, the ones that were rolling along the floor. It's a little tiny rolling machine, and I say tiny. I don't know how big it is. It's probably no bigger than maybe a kid's wagon. And it has on it, it has some kind of an automatic weapon. It also can fire a small cannon. And this thing just rolls along the ground. And it can zero in on enemy troops or any target using some kind of computer imagery. Now, it's being remote controlled. But it's on the ground, as opposed to a drone, and it rolls along in little treads, but it's not very big. Now, there's that. And there's any number of these gadgets that they have developed. Now, former President Bush also promised to create an agile, lethal, readily deployable military until the prolonged ground wars in Afghanistan and Iraq required a larger army and more heavily armored vehicles. This time, defense analysts say fiscal pressures, technological advances, changing threats, and an aversion to another land war may make a military transformation more achievable. I think the ideas work better now than in 2001, said Michael O'Hanlon, a defense analyst at the Brookings Institute. The plausibility of simultaneous large ground wars is substantially less than before. Meanwhile, maritime threats have grown greater in the Persian Gulf, and the rise of China is even more impressive. Well, if there's one thing that we ain't very good at, it's predicting when the next war is going to be. You know. So,
what are you saying?
Well, I don't like this guy doing all this talking about the plausibility of simultaneous large ground. How the hell do you know, man? I think what you got to do is plan for those eventualities. Anything you don't think will happen, plan for it.
Yeah, but how are they going to do that? They said they don't have big troops.
Fine. You don't have to. We happen to have something called a nuclear weapon.
No.
Yep.
Are you trying to say that you'd drop an A-bomb on everybody?
I'm telling you right now. If we've got A-bombs, why ain't we using them? You don't want to have a big military? You don't want to have, you know, all of this jazz? You have multiple ground wars? You got all kinds of stuff going on? We got the ultimate, baby. We got them in those missile silos. And I say it's about time we start using. I'm kidding around, folks. I'm not.
No, you got me scared, man.
I'll take it easy. But I will tell you this. I mean, if really, you know, I don't think this guy should be talking about, hey, the plausibility of ground. How does he know? If the Chinese want to jump us, if somebody else does, then we've got multiple ground wars, and we'll go find Michael O'Hanlon and say, hey, I thought you said this was going to happen, man. And where do you think he's going to be?
Probably in a bomb shelter.
You got it. So, I'm telling you, man, if we've got them, we got to use them. You don't want to kill soldiers. We don't have the money. If we got these, and you know, they've been talking more and more about these contained or these small... nuclear devices. In other words, you don't have to lob a nuclear missile at somebody that's going to explode and take out five different cities. You can certainly have one with a reduced capacity, I think is how they put it in the military. So why not? Anyway, Panetta's plan, which will face a divided Congress in an election year. Oh, yeah, that's right. I forgot all these great ideas that got to go through those knuckleheads. Calls for shrinking the Army and Marine Corps by about 100,000 people while placing greater focus on advanced missiles, new unmanned systems, and a new strategic bomber, among other things. By the way, somebody was tweeting from the Rose Bowl on New Year's Day, and they said they saw that stealth bomber fly overhead.
Yeah, you're talking about that, right?
Yeah, and I'll never forget the tweet. It was from Morgan Murphy, who's a very, very funny... a comedian, and she said they were sitting there and they're watching the ball game, or maybe it was before the game, and there was all kinds of festivities, and suddenly they looked up and there was this big black, huge black bat. Not a sound.
They don't make any noise.
They don't make, and I saw that at the Rose Parade myself. I saw that like 13, 14 years ago. They flew that damn thing over the Rose Parade. We were there. And somebody said to me, here comes the stealth bomber. And I was, well, where is, I didn't, you don't hear anything, folks. I'm telling you, imagine, it. Well, it's like, I guess you're, what you would imagine those alien invasion movies. I mean, seriously, because you don't hear a thing, and you see this enormous, big, jet black thing suddenly just sail right over top of you, going about as fast as a jet would at that altitude, you know.
Well, high, how high up was it?
A couple thousand feet. Maybe 3, 4, 5,000 feet. Just, I obviously I can't approximate the sound because there was no sound. But to see something that big, making no noise at all, just freaky, you know.
Well, what did you think?
I thought it was like a balloon or something at first. I don't know, what the hell is that? They said, that's the stealth. And then all of a sudden you go, oh, now I know why they call it the stealth. Not just because it's tough to pick up on radar, but because you can't even hear this damn thing. It's pretty heavy. Anyway, so that's what Panetta wants to do.
It's going to put another stealth bomber.
Well, it says another strategic bomber. The days of Iraq and Afghanistan and long counterinsurgency operations are over, said Gordon Adams, a professor of American University in Washington. I think that's a good thing. And he's basically, whether future presidents like it or not, whether future Congresses like it or not, I think that guy just made the correct call. I said, the American people are not going to do it anymore. America's not going to do it anymore. We're not doing this counterinsurgency jazz. Now, we can go in and assist people in, you know, one thing about America is we have always been ready to help people achieve freedom. That's just been our thing. You know, since the very time the country was founded, we always said wherever there are people who want to be free, we will go and help. But we can't do it with people anymore. What we want to do is do it with assets. Do it with, like we did World War II, with Lend and Lease. Or Lease-Lend, or however they said that.
Lease-Lend. Lend-Lease. Lend-Lease.
Lend-Lease, that's it. And, with a much more creative, you know, military force. But we're not going to start pouring people into the battles for other countries. That's just, I don't even favor that. And believe me when I tell you, I'm in favor of a strong military. But so to be sure, any plan to shrink the military comes with risk, said David Maxwell, Associate Director of Center for Peace and Bullcrap. You know, who the hell knows?
What do you call it that for?
I never heard of these guys.
Let me see. Center for Peace and... Who's the one here?
Do you guys always have to just take that stuff and stick it right up in your face so that I got your... Jeez.
Get snot on it.
No, I didn't.
This is David Maxwell, who's the associate director for Hey, let me see. Give me that. For Center, it doesn't matter what it's called. I don't think anybody can predict whether we'll be in another ground war again. Maxwell said. Leading Republicans in Congress were quick to criticize the planned drawdown as reckless. Well, what ground war are we going to be in? Why don't we start using some of these assets? We already know from the Gulf War and from other wars that having air superiority is the name of the game, man. It has been since World War II. If you have that, you have an enormous advantage. We don't ever want to be in a position where another country or an enemy has air superiority over us, because we're going to be screwed six ways to sunset. So you always want that. The number of troops on the ground, you know, the Gulf War, I don't want to say it was won before they sent the troops in, but by God, it was pretty well, you know, because we bombed the hell out of Baghdad and everything else.
I don't know, man. I think you got to have boots on the ground.
Yeah, that's what they say. Boots on the ground.
Yeah, okay. Well, I got your boots on the ground.
It makes sense.
Anyway, that's Leon Panetta's headache, man. It ain't mine. All right, coming up here on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show, as we continue here with our news and information hour, a Pentagon shooter has been sentenced to, I don't know, 20 years or something. This was the guy that was shooting at the Pentagon and driving. He was an ex-Marine. We'll get into some of that stuff. Plus some entertainment news as well as we return here on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show and philhendryshow.com.
Truth right is our bitch. The Phil Hendry Show.
Thank you.
world-famous Phil Henry Show.
And I think it's asinine, okay? That's why I said what I said. I didn't say it because I wanted to argue with you. I just think it's asinine.
Phil, I don't think this guy's got popular opinion, and I knew you were going to do the story. That's why I've asked Bud. So, Bud, have you got that? Bud, are you there?
Yeah, right here. You want to hear this? I mean, I've got the, I got it lined up. Hold on. Chicken off the sea. Is that it?
Yeah, that's it.
That's asinine.
I want that in the middle of this story.
Get out of here.
Yeah, but you got to do it.
In any event, we're going to talk. I want to talk to you about this Captain Shatino. He is the captain of the Costa Concordia. And as you know, this is the man who has been accused of having. Do you have to play it every time?
Every time, yeah, if you mention him.
I
just don't mention his name.
Yeah, that's a good idea. So the captain of the Costa Concordia that I will not mention his name. What is that about?
You mentioned the captain.
Anyway, the captain of the Costa... Okay, here we go. The captain of the Costa Concordia apparently is being defended by his wife and her name. And she's actually... There's a picture of her here on the cover of one of the Italian magazines. Very lovely lady. Her name is Fabiola Russo. She has defended her husband. She says that he is considered a maestro by his crew. She says those that live on land cannot judge the actions of a captain at sea. And she is quite the advocate on behalf of her husband, and I'm sure that we all appreciate that, guys, don't we, having a strong woman by our side? Why are you talking about that?
Yeah, you're getting too positive.
Get out of here with that chicken of the sea. That's really insulting, bud, okay?
That's what the guy is. He's chicken, and that's just the way it's going to be.
Oh, is that right? If you play that one more time, I'm going to belt you the next time you play it. The next time you play it, I'm going to belt you. You understand what I'm saying?
I don't care.
Oh, you don't care? Yeah, David.
You don't lay a hand on him. The Americans with Disabilities Act, remember? You put your hand on a target. That'll happen.
Will you hang up on that guy, please? Put my hand on a target. Tell that guy to start watching his language, okay?
I ain't telling him nothing.
I want you to start doing what I tell you to do, man, not what he tells you to do.
All right.
You know, you're working for me, right? You working for me?
Yeah.
You're not working for him. You're working for me.
Well, that's true.
So you got to do what I ask you to do, not what he asks you to do. And you do what I ask you to do, we have a better show.
Yeah, you're right about that.
Thank you.
Sorry.
Now, the captain of this boat who had been...
Get your ass.
Get him out of here. In any event, those at sea navigate while those on land judge, Mrs. Russo said. She said her husband was a brilliant navigator and was regarded as a maestro by his crew. It comes as Shatino was accused of trying to come up with a cover story about the incident to hide his culpability. Costa Cruz's maritime operations manager Robert Ferrarini said in a report to Italy's parliament that Shatino wanted him to say the power cut caused the accident, even though witnesses say the blackout followed the crash. And then it has pictures here of this partially capsized ship. So she's caught the imagination and the eye of the Italian public. Fabiola Russo, very pretty lady there.
Yeah, that probably going to offer her and put her in a movie or some jazz like that.
Yeah, they always do that.
I put her in a movie. I don't know, but yeah, you're right. They generally try to make some sort of a big deal out of stuff like that. But that whole situation has caused a lot of people that I know not to. I never knew that. Cruise ships were, it seems to me that cruise ship incidents and cruise ship accidents and cruise ship fatalities happen at a record. If it happened to aircraft, if it happened to passenger aircraft, they would ground every airplane in America. You know?
What do you mean?
What do I mean? I mean, dude, every week it seems, at least during the high season for cruises, which could be summertime, it depends on that part of the world. Somebody fell overboard. I got stories. I was on the Channel 5 website on Saturday night, man. They got at least a half a dozen stories going back to the middle of summer. Somebody going overboard on a cruise ship. Somebody going overboard on a cruise ship going off of Mexico. Somebody overboard on a cruise ship in the Caribbean. Somebody, you know, they can't find this guy and they can't find that guy. And then they've got stories about, how about that? diseases and stuff.
Yeah, well, yeah, there's like that stories about how somebody's diaper turned up in a food and stuff.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I don't know about that, but the sanitation on these things seems to be wanting. And they have an outbreak of this, and they got an outbreak of that. And then you got murders being committed on these things. Guys are taking their wives on these cruise ships thinking that this is the next best thing to, you know, no fuss, no muss murder. I mean, God knows, if you watch enough Investigation Discovery, as I do, as we all do here on the Phil Hendry Show, because that's the official cool TV show of the Phil Hendry Show.
Well, which one? I mean, the whole network?
Yeah, the whole network, I should say, the TV show. But anyway, you see these husbands that kill their wives. These guys have got about 5 cents worth of brains. You wonder how they ever made it out of the cradle without dying, without choking on something, you know, without choking on their own fingers. These clowns will come up with the screwiest ways. And the thing that gets me is it's always this. Man, I got it made. I cleaned up the blood. I cleaned up the fingerprints. I got rid of her car. I got rid of her body. I got rid of the DNA. Yeah, there's only one problem, man. She had like $1 million life insurance policy, and you went and tried to claim it like 3 seconds after she died. That's a little bit of a red flag, you know.
You kidding me, man? I saw that one show that guy did that, and the cop, that's the only thing that tipped the cops off.
Exactly. Cops are sitting there going, gosh, what happened? What happened? What happened? We don't know. Well, the first thing the cop does is look at the relatives. They look at the closest people to a murder victim. Those are the first people they look at. You know, so all this horse dung and these guys and the phony baloney 911 calls. I mean, if it wasn't so tragic, you'd just laugh yourself sick. Yes, my wife, she's killed and she's this and that. Almost when they start those shows off, you know.
Now, every time they start off a show like that, man, I know the guy did it.
Like that one show we were watching the other night, the guys, you know, my wife and this and that, and I don't know what happened to her. You know, I think it was like within 4 hours the cops had this guy pegged as the killer. You know. But the one that I saw that just blows you away, this guy, you know, these guys, they all think they're, and psychopaths think they're geniuses. And psychopaths, the only problem with a psychopath is the following. Well, among the many problems, but this is the one that always gets them. They think they're really, really smart. And they're not. They're as smart as they are. In other words, being a psychopath doesn't add points to your IQ. It certainly adds to your opinion of yourself. But if you're an idiot, you're still an idiot, whether you think you're, you know, God's gift to humanity or not. And these guys are classically bad planners. They don't know. They do this stuff because they think they're so smart, and they wind up, you know, so this jackass, he kills his wife. He gets rid of the body by, what do you think?
Probably took it out in the desert and burned it or something.
Exactly, because, you know, fire destroys all the evidence. Yeah, huh? Cops are way past that now, man. They could find evidence. Jack, you know, they could find evidence of a nuclear blast, you know, hundreds and thousands of years after the fact. All they got to do is run a Geiger counter, so I guess that. Anyway, they figure this thing out by, well, let's check the life insurance. Yeah, sure enough, he tried to claim a policy on her, like, within hours after she died. Okay? Hey, dummy! So they nailed him, you know.
How long did it take?
This genius, I think they busted him. It took a total of 24 hours. They busted this jackass. World-famous Phil Hendry Show is produced by Phil Hendry and Dan Northcraft. And please do visit our website, philhendryshow.com. For all of your downloads, all of your archives, and certainly our Phil Hendry Show shop, where you can get a lot of our great merchandise as well. It's been a fantastic, fantastic time with you guys. Thank you so, so much. And we will see you tonight here on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show and philhendryshow.com for the podcast. Later and greater.
Phil Hendry.